Well, hi, and welcome to tonight's live talk with Janine, From Aha to Long-Lasting Change. Really. Janine will be with us at the top of the hour, and during that hour, Janine will talk about how to turn those light bulb moments into true transformation. She'll also be answering many of the questions you've sent in. It's going to be a powerful talk, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Now, while we're waiting for Janine to come on, I thought I'd like to tell you about several events with Janine that are coming up in the next few months. In February, she's going to be doing many radio interviews and a book signing for This Messy, Magnificent Life, Janine's new book, which is out in paperback. February 22nd, from 7 to 9 p.m., she'll be at Copperfield Bookstore in Petaluma, California. Janine will be reading from the new book, This Messy, Magnificent Life, and answering questions and signing books. So if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, she'd love to see you there. We hope you can join her at Copperfield Books in Petaluma. In March, there'll be a workshop in the San Francisco Bay Area, March 1st and 2nd, at the Pullman Hotel in Redwood City, near the San Francisco International Airport. And this workshop, which is Janine's only West Coast workshop in 2019, is called Women Wait in Power, Releasing the Energy of Obsession. During this powerful two-day intensive, Janine will explore with you the key touchstones that can help transform the energy of obsession and transform your relationship with food and your body. So I hope you can join Janine and discover what's possible when you reclaim your power. For more information about this weekend workshop, and you can find secure online registration at JanineRoth.com. In May is Janine's spring retreat, May 14th to 19th at the Mount Madonna Center in Watsonville, California, a beautiful retreat location in the Santa Cruz Mountains overlooking Monterey Bay. This deep immersion is offered only twice a year. Janine only does her retreats twice a year, one in the spring and one in the fall. And you'll have 6 days with Janine immersed in this program, surrounded by unbelievably support, close personal attention, and the ongoing retreat community. The retreat is filling quickly, and some room options are quite limited and sell out very early. So if you want to register or find out more about this retreat, go to JanineRoth.com. There you'll find all the information about tuition, room options, travel suggestions, and more. And you can also register by phone, especially if you have questions. Call our retreat manager, Judy, at 703-401-0871. That's 703-401-0871. And Judy's always happy to answer your questions, take your registration, and she's, you know, your go-to resource if you have any questions about Janine's programs. Again, for information about all these upcoming events, go to Janine's website, janineroth.com/events. That's JanineRoth.com/events. You know, on Janine's website, janineroth.com, there's so many ways to support yourself, including signing up for Janine's email list, to receive her e-newsletters, updates on all her retreats and workshops and audios, and all her upcoming free talks like the one tonight. You can also find there information on Janine's two online courses. You can listen to many inspiring podcast interviews that you'll find on the recent press page. You can explore her CDs and downloadable MP3 audios of Janine's talks, many of which were recorded at the retreats and workshops. So that'll give you a really good flavor of what it's like to be at one of the retreats and workshops. Also, we hope you'll join Janine on Facebook. It's www.facebook.com/JanineRoth. You know, every week Janine posts teachings and insights to inspire you, and you're invited to share in the dialogue with your comments. And if you're new to the page, and even if you're not, at the conclusion of tonight's talk, jump on Facebook, share with Janine and the other students what tonight was like for you. So, okay, Janine will be here at the top of the hour. We really, really look forward, and thank you for joining us.
Well, hi, everybody. It is the top of the hour. Thank you, Matt, for being the lovely introducer that you are. And thank you, everybody, for joining me, for being with us, for being here, from gathering together or for gathering together and spending your time, which I know is precious, in this way with me and with us. So let's just take a breath. Take a breath, arrive. I know so many of you have questions, and I've read every question that was sent to me, so thank you. Some of you might be anticipatory. Some of you might already be bored. You never know what's going on. So whatever's going on, make room for that. Allow that. If you have an ache in your foot, that's okay. Without trying to change it, just let it be there without resisting or fighting anything. Just let yourself be where you are. Take a look around the place you are sitting in or standing in, or maybe you're in your car, hopefully pulled over to the side. Just take a look around and orient yourself. Let yourself be. And take another breath. Feel your feet on the floor, the bottom of your feet touching the floor. Or if you're sitting on a chair where your legs don't reach the floor, feel your butt. You want to get into your body and out of your mind. Because during the next little while that we're together, the more present you can be, the more open you can be, the more you'll be able to take in, the less your mind is filled with but, the more you'll be able to hear and take in. Sort of like warm honey reaching you, reaching the places that are hard to reach. That happens when you come into your body, when you breathe, when you sense those feet on the floor, your right arm, your left arm. That's the first thing. Because if you're not here, no matter what happens in this next little while, it's just going to pass you right by. It's like seeing a beautiful sunset but not taking time to really look at it and take it in. Just zooming right past. Again, welcome. Tonight we're going to talk about change, and I have been thinking, pondering, working, inquiring about this, working with retreat students, working with myself for years about how change actually happens, how insight, which in cultural parlance these days is called aha moments, how those aha moments lead to change. And as I was reading through all your questions, and thank you, all of you, for sending me those questions. I love reading those questions. It really gives me a window into what's going on for you, and I appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable like that through email, to tell the truth, to let me have a glimpse, a little snapshot of your life. And as I was reading through these questions, and as I was thinking about the changes in my own life and how change has happened for me, I remembered a couple of things. One of them is, as I've told many of you who have been to retreats and written about in my book, Lost and Found, when my husband and I, who you just heard, lost all of our money in 2008, the way that I was able to sleep through the night and really climb back from the cliffs of despair and shame. I was terribly ashamed, and I was terrified because each of us had spent 30 years working, and that money was gone, just completely gone, zero left. We had, I think we had $2,000. The only way I was able to make it through those days, Matt was gone on a trip, was to focus on what hadn't been lost, which basically meant every time my mind started wandering in the direction of worry or fear, I can't believe you did that, how dumb was that, where are you going to live, what are you going to do, you're going to die homeless and alone on the streets eating cat food out of cans with, you know, prickly hairs growing out of the moles on your face. I had a big story and a big picture going on. The only way I was able to stay grounded, I would more say to stay just breathing, because I was terrified, was to bring my mind back every time it wandered to what was here now, to the fact that I had a roof over my head now, to the fact that I had a teacup with tea in it that I was drinking now, to the fact that I still had feet, that I was another day above ground. I was alive. And every day for many, 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 many times a day, I'd bring myself back to what hadn't been lost, to what wasn't wrong. And in the process of doing that, I became more and more joyful. And the purpose of me telling you this story now is not about money. It's about one of the instigators of change, of what helps us change. Big events help us change. In my own case, and I'm going to say a little bit more about that, in my own case, I had already been in a car accident that had landed me in a wheelchair. I had had a near-death experience in which I was leaving my body. And those things had happened in a couple of years apart from each other. But it was the persistence of bringing my mind back, which was so different than what I had ever done, the vigilance with which I had did that, that made me feel joyful. Because when you're focusing on what you do have enough of, and when you're focusing on waking up in the morning and the fact that you're alive, your attention is not on what's wrong, it's on what's right. And the constant act and my commitment to that. So there were two things there. There was the event and the suffering that came from that. And for some people, it can be a diagnosis. It can be someone they love dying. It can be an event like that, losing all your money. It can be having your house burn up in a fire. It's usually a limit event, meaning it's a huge event that in many ways, in order to survive, you need to do things differently. And that can lead to change. Now, sometimes that leads to long-lasting change, and sometimes it doesn't. In my own case, with that money loss, what that led to was me seeing that I could change, but it didn't lead me to the practice of doing that every single day. I soon forgot. After 6 months had passed, I remembered the experience, but the memory of the experience is not the experience itself, and I didn't make a commitment to do things differently. I'm going to talk more about how you act and how to do things differently based on actions you take. There's suffering. That's one thing that can lead to change, in my own case. Another thing that can lead to change is awareness. And by the way, suffering includes this terrible suffering that so many of us have. about our relationship with food. The problem is that for most of us, we are so mired in it, so used to it, that we have given up believing about change. The second thing is awareness. Now, and I'll tell you a story also from my own life, but with the addition of a couple of different questions that I got that illustrate the story from my own life, because I think it's pretty common. The category of what I'm just going to talk about is old decisions you've made that you don't even realize you've made that are limiting you today. So first is a catastrophic event and or the suffering that comes from it, and I wouldn't recommend that people go out and look for catastrophic events. The second is becoming aware of old decisions you've made that you didn't realize you've made. So story from my own life, then two other stories from people who've written me in the last 2 days with questions. When I was really young, it seemed to me that my mom was very unhappy. Just really, really unhappy. Lonely, unhappy, didn't like her life. And this is what I perceived, this is what I believed, and what I interpreted it from that was that the best thing for me to do was to damp down my own happiness to match her unhappiness. I made a decision very early on that I was only allowed to have as much happiness or joy as my mother had. I was allowed to match her, but I wasn't willing to go beyond that. Now, kids are altruistic. They're self-sacrificing. They're loyal. Kids are very loyal. That old decision I made stayed with me for many, many years. First, it showed up in my relationship with food because she struggled with food. That was the big struggle. She was a fat kid. She struggled with food. She hated her body. She was ashamed of her body. Then she started dieting. She actually took me and also my cousin to the diet doctor, and we all went on diet pills together when I was 16. She was constantly dieting, so I was constantly dieting. She was unhappy with her weight, so I was unhappy with my weight. We matched. What's more important than how it expressed itself, because I do want to say it continued to express itself through many areas of my life, so that I found myself when I would get good news, or that when I would even read a beautiful letter from someone and I would feel quite thrilled with it, I found myself belittling it, taking it away from myself without knowing why. I remember in the 1980s when I had written my first couple of books, and a friend was helping me address envelopes, this is before email, address envelopes so I could write back to everybody who wrote me. She would sit with me, we'd read the letters, I'd write back, she'd address them, and she'd say to me, you know, you're not taking this in at all. These are not even affecting you. These people are saying lovely things, but there was some way where it felt dangerous to take that in. Some old decision, and I know this is going to be a stretch for some of you, but think about it for a moment. This old decision that I had, that I was not allowed to be too happy. After a while, I didn't think it was related to my mother at all. I just forgot about that. Now, I want to read you parts of two letters that have to do with the same thing. Somebody writes to me, I was so fit and healthy when I was living in New York, and since I got married, I'm watching myself do the same stuff I watched my mom do. Watching myself do the same exact patterns that she did. I need to pull myself out of it so my kids don't repeat the pattern. I see it so clearly, yet I'm punishing myself, and I'm not sure why. I'm a good wife, mother, daughter, and friend, yet for some reason, as confident and strong as I am, I feel like I'm falling short. Now, one way to look at that would be, I'm punishing myself, and I don't know why. Another way to look at that is, I made a decision that I don't even remember making, and this is where awareness comes in. So the first one was suffering and or catastrophic events. The second one is awareness of old decisions. I made a decision, and I'm bringing it to your awareness now so that you can just, you know, ask yourself the question, huh, if this was an expression, if my eating was an expression and or my reluctance to change was an expression of an old decision I made, what would that be? What would that be? What's the decision that I made? Does it have anything to do with a caretaker? Does it have to do with a limit on how much goodness, pleasure, delight I'm allowed to have? Does it have to do with that? Here's another letter. This is from Donna. I've had many aha moments reading and listening to you over the years, but I don't turn it into lasting change. The bottom line is I feel safer on a diet, not happier, just safer. I'm 57 years old, and in this past year, I lost 90 pounds dieting and then became anorexic, and now I'm going back up the scale and panicking. I've been down this all-or-nothing diet and binge cycle too many times in my life. I was a thin child who ate for hunger and stopped for fullness, but dieting was big for my mom, and I soon adopted that after eating to please her, and then eating for me afterwards became my way of life. I am seriously thinking that I am a person that cannot trust themselves around food. Is that possible? In both these cases, both of these people are being so terribly hard on themselves. I'm seriously thinking I'm a person that can't be trusted around food, and I'm punishing myself, and I don't know why. That's what the first person said, what Laura said. I'm punishing myself, and I don't know why. I feel like I'm falling short. Not everything is the way it seemed. You know, the superego, which was a big part of a lot of the questions that came in, how bad I am, how terrible I am, how ashamed of myself I am, that's the superego talking. Those are the words. All of you who have heard me talk about the superego before, I've written about it in Women, Food, and God in the chapter called The GPS from the Twilight Zone. I wrote about it again in This Messy, Magnificent Life in the chapter called The Crazy Ant in the Attic. We all have one, and it shouts from the wings what we're doing wrong. And there's no way of getting it right. So there's disengaging there. We need to disengage from that. But first we need to see, in this case, what's the underlying belief? I'm not allowed to have this much. I can't take care of myself. Feeling good is going to threaten people. What about the loyalty to my mother? This is where we're merged. Even if your mother died 15 years ago, you still have your mother inside, and there's still some kind of loyalty that, unless we've looked at that, and it's not, you don't need 30 years of therapy to do this. You need to, or not you need to, you can ask yourself the question, what am I being loyal to? Or if this eating was an expression of an old decision I made, what would that decision be? So there's awareness. Now, the third part of how we follow through with insights, aha, into long-lasting change. Two parts here. One is that we do. You ask yourself, really, really ask yourself, what do you actually want from this life here on earth? Do you want to feel awake and alive more than you want ice cream? Or do you want ice cream more? And now some people want ice cream more. There's no wrong answer. You know, I want to say here, there's no wrong answer, there's no right answer. Nobody is getting a gold star for having thin thighs. Everybody dies. When you die, you leave your body behind. That's it. Done. Over. Gone. Thin thighs don't matter. and all the regrets that people have had on their deathbed, and I've read books about these regrets because I'm fascinated, as some of you know who read my books, fascinated with death. All the regrets, not one person has ever, ever said, I should have had thin thighs. I regret not being thin enough. Nobody has regrets about the size of their bodies. What the regrets are about are simply about showing up. I regret that I missed so many moments of my life by working too hard. Working too hard is a big one. So there's a question to ask yourself, what do you want? What do you really, really want? Is it to feel as good as it's possible to feel? Is it to treat yourself with food? As I said, no gold stars for either one of those. No right or wrong answers. The other thing that's the question be there about, well, you can say, well, of course I want to feel alive and awake, but why do you want to feel alive and awake? That has to be an answer in there. It has to be an answer in there because when push comes to shove, so to speak, and when you're out to dinner or it gets difficult or you don't feel like following through on something you've decided you're going to do, like take a walk every day, be outside every day, make a connection with a friend every day, there's got to be something, a flame, so to speak, that's deeper than the surface, something that you know is possible, that you want for this life, something you're willing to be steadfast about. Now, I know that many of you have said to me in your questions to me, I don't know why, I just don't know why I keep going back. I don't know why I keep going back. This person's name is Maggie. She says, I've read and reread Jeanine's work extensively and find it enormously insightful and enlightening. I've followed the eating guidelines successfully a number of times now, getting down to my goal weight. The problem is I seem to get to this goal weight and then shortly after I relapse. I start to eat out of control again. I start to break the rules and my mind craves food that my body doesn't want. Fried food, ice cream sandwiches, peanut butter, ugh. I say to myself that I just need one quesadilla chock full of cheese and then I'll go back to listening to myself. Or I just need one more packet of chips and then I'll eat according to the guidelines. It seems to be that in that choice between bolting or eating with compassion, I default to bolting. I'm sure the answer must be excruciatingly simple. Eat according to the guidelines. But I can't seem not to bolt. So then she goes on to say one more thing. I wonder if it's because my goal weight isn't really my body's goal weight. If I keep eating mindfully, I think my body might actually lose more weight. But maybe I get to my goal and then get scared. Anyway, I know how successful eating to the guidelines is, according to the guidelines, but I want to know how to make it stick well and truly for good. So in this question is a couple of things that we've talked about. This was Maggie who wrote this. Thank you, Maggie. So Maggie gets to, she follows the guidelines, the eating guidelines, or if the Love Could Speak guidelines. She does very well on them, meaning she eats what her body wants, not what her mind wants. She finds herself losing weight, and you don't need to lose weight. That's not part of what's successful about this. Successful about this is feeling good in your body, feeling alive, feeling as if you are thriving. And then she gets down, and then suddenly she starts gaining weight again. And that happens to many people. Now, that could also be what we were talking about at the beginning, an old decision. I will threaten people around me if I am too fill in the blank, too happy, too successful, too joyful, too thin. If I have too many friends, people around me will get jealous. That doesn't feel good. These are based on old decisions. That could be one thing that's going on. And the underneath that, I'm just not allowed to feel that good. I'm just not allowed. My body seems to know what she wants, she says, but then I go back to having things that my body doesn't want. She says I start to break the rules. Here's something that I would really recommend. You don't call the eating guidelines rules. These aren't rules. They are, no matter how many times I say that, everybody thinks they're rules, that because the problem with calling something a rule is then you want to break it. So, and she says, I start to break the rules and my mind craves food that my body doesn't want. My mind craves food that my body doesn't want. One option here is discover through support, and I'll talk about support in a moment. Through support, you really need support to do this. I don't recommend doing this alone. I want to underline that about 500 times because I know how important support is in my own life, and I see it with our retreat students over and over and over again. Support, support, support. Need somebody to witness you and also somebody to whom you can be accountable, both. Not accountable in bad, 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 but accountable in, yes, I made a commitment, I broke that commitment, and I'm noticing what it feels like in my body to break that commitment, what this feels like to eat fried food, ice cream sandwiches, peanut butter, as Maggie says, a quesadilla chock-filled with cheese. That's what support does, and again, I will talk about that in a moment. How you can follow through, let's just take Maggie's question with the eating guidelines, is that you, with that support, you decide that you're going to follow one eating guideline at a time. And you practice, you make that a practice. Now, here's what I want to say about change that shocked me, which was originally what prompted me to want to do this call, and this might not sound shocking to you, but it was shocking to me. I had had so many big insights, countless insights, but I still felt like nothing was essentially changing inside me. There were a lot of things changing on the outside, and nobody would have looked at me and said, oh, she's a loser, oh, nothing's ever changing for her, oh. It wasn't from the outside. It was what it felt like to be me from the inside, my default place, which was a feeling of I did it wrong. I'm leading the wrong life. I'm not the right person to be leading my life. Somehow I'm wrong. And it was so old. And I wasn't even sure where that came from. So all the insights I had didn't actually change anything except that it made me realize that something else was possible until I started doing things differently. It was actions that actually made the difference. You know, there's a great quote from Lao Tzu, who wrote the Tao Te Ching. He said, and this is 3,000 years ago, if you do not change direction, you may end up where you are heading. If you do not change direction, you may end up where you are heading. Right, that makes sense. If you don't do something to change, you're going to end up the same, in the same place. And so what does it take to do that? What does it actually take to make a change, to take an actionable step? One thing is, as I was just saying, that you will decide what you're going to do. I will follow one eat guideline or two eating guidelines a day. Have a partner show up. You need to do something concrete here. It's not enough to say to yourself, I'm going to do it, because it's too easy to get bamboozled and drowned in the tsunami of your life, of the way you did things. What I understood when we lost our money, and after I had those few weeks, I think there were actually a couple of months of bliss, and then I slowly started going back to my, I would call it my happiness set point or set point of joy, you know, my allowable modicum of joy per day, daily, was that I wasn't continuing to do the things that I did when we first lost our money. The big suffering had stopped. The catalyst for the change had stopped. I had had the catalyst. I had had the awareness. I even had the practice, which was focus on what's right. But I stopped doing it. Unless you keep up a practice, And I didn't used to like the word practice. It just felt like I was back in school, and or it felt like I was in eighth grade, and I was with my piano teacher, Mr. Bender, and I was practicing the piano, and I hated practicing, and I didn't quite understand why I had to practice. I don't think I actually understood why I had to practice for a very long time. I have been a rule breaker for most of my life, which is how I came to this not dieting way of being. I was still a very good dieter, but then I couldn't stand it anymore, and then I broke all the rules, and then I binged. And coming up with the eating guidelines was a way of stepping outside the box, of not having any rules. I had to put them down in numerical fashion, so they are a list, so they can be perceived as rules, but they are a way of not having rules because they're a way of just listening to yourself. With the money loss, so let's see, that was 10 years ago, I had spent more than 50 years inscribing, we know a lot now about neurochemistry, neural architecture, what happens in your brain, the grooves in your brain, what it takes to change. I had spent all of those years, you know, what I say about myself or what I used to say about myself, give me lemonade and I will give you lemons. I could turn any situation into what was wrong. Fabulous lemonade, I'll give you lemons back. Let me show you the dark side of this. Let me show you the shadow side of this. I just didn't feel like I could be a joyful person, that it just wasn't meant for me. There was something missing in my DNA. During those weeks after the money loss, and months after the money loss, I felt like a completely different person. And it was only because I was practicing something different. Unless you do things differently, if you do not change direction, you may end up where you are heading. You've got to do something differently and do it. So an everyday practice. And that is up to you, what you decide. Some possibilities of practice are what I did after our money loss, which was focus on what was right, what I could find, not what I had lost. And I did that many, 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 many times a day because otherwise I would have gone slipping off the cliffs of despair. I didn't have a choice there. Well, I guess I did have a choice. I could have muddled around in despair for quite a long time. That was my choice and spent many sleepless nights. But I understood because I did have a lot of support, because there were wise people around me who reminded me what was not lost. Because of that, I was able to right myself and do this practice. It's about picking out a practice for yourself. Now, in This Messy, Magnificent Life, I talk about what's not wrong and doing that every day. There's also the practice of 5 times a day for 12 seconds a day, standing in front of something, a tree, the sky, a beautiful object, and taking it in, just really taking it in, reaching out your hand as if you're picking it up, taking it in. There is the end of the day, and these are things that I actually do every day now. When I really caught on to it was actually possible to change who I took myself to be by doing certain practices, it was possible to change that doomed, damaged, I'm not allowed to be happy person, really happy person, by taking actionable or doing actionable things, doing practices. I was white on rice on that one. I wasn't going to stop doing that. So that every night now, when my husband and I get into bed, we speak about, I call it the lovelies of the day, or what made us awestruck about the day. And sometimes it's just, for me, it's just watching our dog walk. Or it's last night, it was looking at the moon and seeing the lunar eclipse. Now, that was staggering. A lot of times it's as simple as the wind on my face or the water going down my throat, actually being thirsty. But it's stopping and taking it in and doing that, really, really doing that. Now, with food, let's talk about food. Or actually, let me talk about support before we talk about food. Because support and the need for it and the thread of it and the power of it threads throughout every single answer that I'm giving, the importance of it. I said a couple of minutes ago that you can't do this alone because of the tsunami of everyday life, because the pull, because, and if we want to put it in scientific terms, the neural architecture of your brain has been so grooved in certain pathways that under any kind of stress, we fall right back into the way we've always done things. So under any kind of stress, unless we're actually doing something to the contrary, doing a practice that grooves something else into our brains, goodness, pleasure, delight in our brains, we're just going to fall back into what's easiest, what's the deepest groove there. What's the way that we know? What's most familiar? So this is about having support for doing something different. This, of course, it's about deciding what you want to do. And with our retreat students, we take what's called aims. They decide what they want to do. And for different people, it's different things. We don't give one practice for everybody. But then we ask them to have buddies, inquiry partners, and showing up is a really big thing. The value of showing up. I just read a book written by a friend of mine, Peter Guzzardi. It's not out yet, it's called Emeralds of Oz. It's about, you know, the wisdom in the Wizard of Oz. And I had a good laugh because he has a section in there about the value of showing up, and he said nothing exemplified that more than Dorothy's house falling down on the Wicked Witch and killing her. She showed up. Just showing up, she did something good, and that made me laugh because, of course, Dorothy really didn't have anything to do with showing up in that way. And what we're talking about is, what does it mean to show up? And what that means is that you have a practice, you show up for that practice, and you also show up in person for as much support as you can. Matt mentioned that we have a workshop coming up on March 1st and 2nd in San Francisco, to which I would urge anybody to come if you can. People come from all over the world. Support isn't only the support that I offer. It's not just Janine Roth support, retreats, workshops, books, CDs, online courses. Of course, it's wherever your heart gets nourished, where you find yourself, what you want the most, deeply supported. But you have to take that leap. Without taking that action, without showing up, it's not going to happen. There are so many excuses not to come to a workshop, not to go to a retreat, not to show up for a call. Some people who have had these buddy calls, they just drop out. But the ones that I've noticed over the years, in our retreat group, because some of the people in our retreat group have been coming over and over again because they find that it's the practice in the community that's so loving and supportive. The ones that show up and keep doing it are the ones who change. They're the ones for whom change happens, because you can't help it. It's not rocket science here. When you do something over and over and over and over again, when Yo-Yo Ma plays his instrument, practice for God only knows how many hours, he plays beautifully. Pablo Casals at 90 was asked, now I think it's the cello, why he still practices every day. And he said, because I'm beginning to notice some improvement. Now, of course, that made me laugh. But nonetheless, it's just showing up for what you love. And what do you love more than this, than wanting to feel good? Now, some people, when I say, and why do you want to feel most awake and alive, or as alive as you possibly can, they say, for my kids. I want to feel that for my kids. Fine. That's good enough. That's good. And that's what Laura said. She doesn't want to pass it down to her kids. In that first little thing I read about, she's doing the same stuff that her mother did. That's fine. Why else do you want to do this? I mean, I want to do it. I don't have kids. But I want to do it because I know I have a limited amount of time on earth, and I know the end, here comes the death thing again, is going to come sooner than I imagine, and I want to live while I'm alive. I want to be here fully. That doesn't mean traveling everywhere, you know, seeing all the places on earth that I could possibly see. It means living this moment fully, this moment and next moment. That takes showing up. And sometimes showing up really does mean showing up in person. It really does mean that. To put your body there. I know in this internet age, everything is so easily accessible. YouTubes, live streams, all that kind of stuff. You never even have to leave your house, and there you are, sitting there alone. And it's not alone, it's not through alone. I mean, yes, only you can do this. Nobody can do this for you, but the gorgeousness of being a human being is being part of a tribe and having support for what you love and finding the people that can support you and what you love. At the workshop in March, there will be people, as I said, from all over the world, and they're there to stick their little toe in the water to see if this is something they might want to do. So I encourage you, if you want to take a leap, or even three big steps, come. So let me keep on talking about feeling fabulous, okay? So here's somebody named Tammy who wrote, I've been following a weighted measured food plan for the past 2 years, and I've lost 42 pounds, but I still want that little something once in a while, and I'm afraid I will binge and gain all the weight back. I've done it before. Do you have any suggestions? I have a couple of different responses to this. One response is, if you feel great, why do you want to mess with that? And I'm going to give the opposite response in a second, but if you feel great, is eating that little something going to be any better than feeling great? I think that's a big question for me. In the last couple of years, I was put on a particular food plan because of some medical issues I've had. And going on this food plan, I started feeling better and better and better and better. I mean, it's not so complicated. It was cutting out sugar and cutting out dairy products and, you know, the regular. I haven't eaten gluten for 20 years, so it wasn't about gluten. And as I started feeling better and better, and would go out to dinner with friends, and they would eat certain foods that weren't, that I knew had contributed to me not feeling good, I had no temptation to eat them, because why would I want to eat something that took away the feeling of fabulousness that, and or even better health than I had had before? Because not everybody is going to feel fabulous. Some people can feel better, but better is better. Why not? Now, the other answer I have to that question, but I still want that little something once in a while, and I'm afraid I'll binge and gain all the weight back. Why don't you see what happens? Why don't you see what happens, Tammy? Because at some level, what I believe is that it's not the weighing and measuring, and it's not the counting of points, and it's not the particular diets that anybody goes on or the fasting. It's the feeling inside you that you feel like yourself. You come home to yourself when you take care of your body. And that is something that I believe, otherwise I wouldn't have created the eating guidelines, which are based on trust. Trusting that there is something essential in every single one of us that actually can be trusted, and that is the desire to be fully alive and to take care of our bodies so that that's possible. What I also feel is, or know from having worked with so many people and myself and changed what I've eaten so many times over the years. I mean, I've been a vegan and a macrobiotic and a pescatarian and a vegetarian. That changes over time. What nourishes my body changes over time. Do I want that? Yes, I do. Have I had to, and this is what we're talking about right now with the old decisions, have I had to look at and get support for old decisions I made that told me, okay, that's too much. You're not allowed to have that. That's really, people aren't going to like that. Nobody's going to like you. Don't go there. Have I had to look at that? Yes. Have I had to disengage from the GPS, from the Twilight Zone that wanted to shame me? Here's a question about this. How do I keep from feeling discouraged thinking about the hundreds of other times I've had the aha moment, thinking, really, this time I'm going to change my habits and lose weight? I feel inspired to do so now, but having failed so many times, it's hard not to be pessimistic. There's a merging that's happening right there with the GPS from the Twilight Zone, with the crazy aunt in the attic screaming at you, don't try, you failed so many times, don't do this again, you're a failure, what makes you think that you can do this again? We are entranced by our stories of the past. We are schlepping our past on our back around with us and creating our present-day moments from what happened in the past. I don't feel like I can do this now because I didn't do it then. What if there was no past? What if you just dropped the past? Now, I know that's a big if. But if you stop telling, these are stories that you're telling yourself that we are enhanced by. Here's another one, Natasha. I've tried my entire life with the best intentions to battle eating and money issues, and I continue to fail and try again. This is even with a smarter kind of approach that emphasizes awareness. I feel like my entire life has been composed of trying and failing, and I can no longer imagine succeeding. I also feel that if I'm able to access support, coaches, books, and the best intentions and battle these problems, how else can I look at this as anything other than my own weaknesses and failures? People with less resources have succeeded, and this just seems like it's unresolvable for me. There it is again, the crazy aunt or the GPS from the Twilight Zone. I'm making a decision. Now, this might be also, there might be an old decision in here, but also the GPS from the Twilight Zone is involved in here. look at all those other people without the resources, and you have so many resources, and you're still not doing it. What's the matter with you? Bash, 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 bash. Unless we disengage, and this is not what this call is about. I've done other calls about that, and as I said, there are chapters in my books about that. Disengage from that voice, no change is possible. That's an entrancing voice. I want to say a couple of other things here. One practice that you can do, along with the what's not wrong, along with stopping and gazing at what's beautiful and taking it in, is living as if. There's a live as if practice. We used to do this for our retreats. We have two little small weekends. And we used to do a walk across the floor, walk as if you are exactly who you want to be. And people walked very differently than they walked. And so what I would say to you is live as if. If you're not there yet, we need to find a way to inject positivity, to turn this around, to practice certain things that allow you to get the glimpse, get the taste on an ongoing basis with support that what you want is possible, because I know it is, and you know it is. Here's how I know you know it is, because you wouldn't have shown up here, because you know what I'm about. I'm not about go on another diet. I'm not about change isn't possible. I'm about it is possible. And I know that you wouldn't have shown up if you didn't believe it was either. So I trust the people who come to me, who come to these calls, who come to my workshops, who come to my retreats. Many people at the retreat started in a workshop. Probably half the people started in a workshop. They needed to see if it was too good to be true. They needed to experience a dim sum version of a retreat by coming to a short workshop, a night and a day. And I know that you believe change is possible. Otherwise, why listen? The next thing is, what steps are you going to take now? What are you going to do now? What are the practices you're going to do? What are the actions you're going to take? What's possible for you? Everybody, I want to say that I have loved being with you, and I so appreciate, again, you coming and hanging out for a while, for this last hour. I want to encourage you to take very, very, very good care of yourself, to look and to see if there are old decisions, write them down, to figure out one or two practices you can do, the live as if practice, the what's not wrong practice, the end of the day that I talked about practice, show up, come to our workshop, come to a retreat, nourish yourself, get all the support you possibly can. I will be on Facebook right now. I'll be answering your questions and looking at your responses, facebook.com/Janine Roth. Thank you all so much for being with me. As always, I love the questions that you ask. I love feeling you there, sensing you there, hearing you there, and we'll do it again soon. I hope to see many of you in person. Sending you all love. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And if you love this talk, you'll truly love spending time with Janine in person this year at several events that are coming up this spring. In February, February 22nd from 7 to 9 p.m. at Copperfields Bookstore in Petaluma, California, Janine will be reading from the paperback of her new book, This Messy Magnificent Life, answering your questions and signing books. She'd love to see you there in person. In March, two amazing transformative days with Janine, March 1st and 2nd, Janine's workshop, Women, Weight, and Power, Releasing the Energy of Obsession, being held in the San Francisco Bay Area. And, of course, you can find details about that on Jeanine's website, JeanineRoth.com. In May, Jeanine's amazing retreat is coming up, the six-day intensive retreat in California, May 14 to 19 at the Mount Madonna Center in Watsonville, California. Jeanine only holds her six-day retreats twice a year, and they always fill up. And some housing options, like double rooms, sell out quickly. So don't wait a minute longer. You can get secure registration at JeanineRoth.com or call our retreat manager, Judy, at 703-401-0871. She'd love to answer all your questions and help make this transformational week possible for you. Once again, for information about all these exciting events and secure registration, go to Jeanine's website, JeanineRoth.com/events. That's JeanineRoth.com/events. Again, thank you so much for being with us tonight, and we'd love to see you in person at one of the upcoming events.